HBO has a great documentary coming on Monday, August 26th, on Marty Glickman, the great athlete and broadcaster. And my guest is the writer, producer, director, and narrator of the documentary, James L. Friedman. He joined us right now. James, how are you?
I'm good. Tony, thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, sure. How'd you get Martin Scorsese to be executive producer, by the way?
That's what everyone seems to want to know. My film had played the Santa Barbara Film Festival, and I got a call from Ari Emanuel, the head of William Morris Endeavor, and he asked if he could see it. And 1 week later, I was sitting in his office, and he said, you know who should see this film? Martin Scorsese. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, my God, Martin Scorsese. You know, I've seen everything he's ever done. You know, now this guy shows promise. And 2 days after that, I received an email from Marty saying, I loved your film, and I'd like to release it through my company at HBO.
Wow.
So pretty much a typical Tuesday in my life.
There you go. Why did you want to do a documentary on Marty Glickman?
Years ago, I worked for Marty. When I was a senior in high school, I used to drive into Manhattan with my brother, my older brother, and watch him produce Marty's radio show at WNEW.
Mm-hmm.
This was a groundbreaking show at the time. It was one of the first all-sports call-in shows in the nation. And one day I'm sitting in the booth, and my brother tells Marty that he's been called up to the Army Reserves, and Marty will need to find another producer. Without missing a beat, Marty pointed directly into the booth at me and said, Jimmy can do it. I literally turned around expecting to see another guy named Jimmy sitting there. There wasn't, and for the rest of that year, I produced Marty Glickman's radio show. He taught me how to screen calls, get the scores off the wire, write them up, schedule commercials. Pretty heady stuff for a 17-year-old. But what I remember most about that time is that Marty Glickman never once treated me like a high school kid. He always treated me as his producer. And frankly, it gave me a professional confidence I have to this very day.
Now, what year was this?
This was the early 70s, 72, I think.
The one thing I came away from the documentary, and something you just touched on, is he seemed like he treated everybody with class. It didn't matter if you were selling hot dogs or you were the head of a network. He treated everybody the same.
Yes, he was truly beloved. You know, when I started calling these people up cold to get them to be in my film, and just in case some of your younger listeners do not know about Marty Glickman, you will know about the people in the film. Marv Albert, Bill Bradley, Mike Breen, Jim Brown, Bob Costas, Frank Gifford, Jerry Stiller, Larry King, David Stern,
Oscar Robertson.
Elliot Gould, you know, on and on. And when I would call these people, you know, they didn't know who I was. I had never made a film.
Mm-hmm.
But Marty Glickman's name, you know, where do you want me? What can I do for you? He touched so many people on so many different levels.
What made him such a great broadcaster?
You know, there are several things. One was the fact that he played the sports. You know, people didn't know, I didn't know when I worked for him, that he was a world-class athlete in track and in football. At Syracuse University. I mean, at one point, Marty Glickman was the third fastest runner in the world behind Jesse Owens and Ralph Metcalf, and an All-American at Syracuse in football. But you never knew it because Marty never spoke about his athletic accomplishments on the air, because to him, the game was the thing, not his background. So you had, one, his knowledge of the game. You had, two, he had, Bob Costas says, he had almost a life force, a vibrancy to him. When he was doing basketball, Mike Breen has a great line about him. He said it was like his voice was attached to the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And just to give your listeners a little understanding of how revolutionary Marty Glickman was as a sportscaster, when he revolutionized basketball radio play-by-play, and by that I mean he created the terms everyone uses today, the key, the lane, the midcourt stripe, swish, and more importantly, gave a geography to the court. Before Marty Glickman, you would listen to a game and it would sound like Friedman passes to Page, Page passes to Johnson, Johnson shoots, it's good. You had no idea where anyone was.
Mm-hmm.
Marty specified, Page dribbles up along the right sideline, throws a bounce pass to the top of the key to Friedman. Friedman throws a behind-the-back pass to Smith. Smith shoots a running one-handed bank shot, it's good. He gave the geography. Larry King has a great line. He says he was television on radio.
Yes. And one thing I got a kick out of it, you guys put up, like, I guess the voice breakdown of Marty doing a game with right next to it, Marv Albert, and then Mike Breen, how they sounded alike in the description of the game.
Yes, that was one of my favorite parts, because, and it was really difficult to find. I tried to get three plays from each 20 years apart, covering 40 years. Mm. Marty announcing at Madison Square Garden in the 50s, and Marv Albert in 1970, and Mike Breen in 1990, and make it sound like the tree of Marty Glickman's broadcasting teachings sound like one play. And when people see that in the theater, they really get a kick out of that. And I love that, too.
Talking to James Freeman, the producer, director, writer, narrator of the HBO documentary on Marty Glickman, which airs on HBO August 26th, which is a Monday. You know, I knew about Marty being an athlete and him getting kicked off the relay team in the 36th Olympics in Berlin. Did that, you say you didn't talk about it much on the air, but did that get the feeling that still burned him all these years later?
You know, it's interesting. I also naively did not know that part of his story. He only talked about it when every 4 years the Olympics would happen and he would be asked about it. And then he was more than happy to talk about it. But as Marv Albert and Bob Costas say, you could sense a little bit the hair on the back of his neck when he talked about it. But what happened is 50 years virtually after Marty was denied the chance to run in Berlin, due to anti-Semitism, he went back to Berlin as a board member of the Jesse Owens Foundation to celebrate Jesse Owens' achievements 50 years later. And all of this anger spilled out of him as he walked on the track that he didn't get the chance to run on all these years later. And he was shocked by himself that he had all this in him. He never realized how hurt he was by this.
I saw that part in the document. Was he cursing walking along?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Marty Glickman was not, someone who cursed. And he said all these curse words were just spewing out of him. And he had so much anger, he got dizzy. Not just that this could have happened to him, but any 18-year-old kid. And, in fact, for me, once I found that piece of footage, I knew the thread of my film. And it really, for me, is what happens when an 18-year-old kid's dreams are crushed by racism and prejudice? Do they become bitter, or do they triumph in life? Well, Marty Glickman not only triumphed, but he used sports as a means of transcending the divisions created by race, class, and religion.
Absolutely. You mentioned some of the great broadcasters who followed in his footsteps. What made him want to become a mentor? Because a lot of broadcasters that kind of keep to themselves and get the feeling, but he seemed to want to help everybody. Why did he want to do that?
Marty loved the craft of broadcasting, of which he was so influential in the beginnings of that. And, Charlie Steiner, who's in the movie, he tells me a story. He said he gets a call from Marty. He didn't know Marty Glickman personally. Mm-hmm. And Marty had seen him do some work, and he said, why don't you come over tomorrow, bring your tapes, and we'll talk and go over them. And Charlie Steiner in the film says he learned more in the 3 hours with Marty that day than he had in the previous 15 years of his career.
Wow. You get the feeling if he was telling you something, you just shut up and listen.
Yeah, exactly. And Marty was very opinionated. He didn't suffer fools lightly. Marty had opinions, but they usually were right on the money. And they were never mean-spirited. They were always to make you better. His big thing was he couldn't stand broadcasters just talk too much. Mm-hmm. And he said, use economy of language. And he was so perfectly suited to broadcast games with movement, basketball, football. And, if there's a line in the film, Y.A. Tittle is upset about something of the old New York football Giants. Mm-hmm. And most announcers were just saying, Tittle is very upset on the sidelines. Marty would say, and Y.A. is stamping his feet up and down like a little kid who had been refused some candy. It's so poetic and so on the nose and perfectly stated. He was brilliant.
James, we've always talked about athletes. Could they, who play in this era, could they play in the 50s? Could guys in the 50s play in this current era? I might get the feeling Marty would have been a good radio talk show host or broadcaster, regardless of the era.
Yes, his talent transcended any era. He was not in love with doing studio shows, or he loved the action of a game.
I love the fact when you listed all the events that he had covered, it was four marble tournaments.
Yes, like 1,000 football
yes.
games, 3,000 basketball games, 16 years of the high school game of the week, and four marble tournaments.
I noticed it was a labor of love for you, but was it difficult to put this film together?
You know, people say, how long did it take to make the film? It took a year to make and 2 years of finding and begging for free footage. That was the, and the footage that I ultimately was able to get is just unbelievable. I mean, it's, you see footage of him racing in 1935. It looks like it was shot in black and white yesterday.
Yeah. Some of it, Randall's Island. I said, where did he get that from?
Yeah, it's that's a real scavenger hunt. And it's very exciting, you know, when you deal with archivists who are the people who are protecting the history of their organizations and right. have real love of what they're doing. And some of them knew about Marty Glickman and went above and beyond. So they'd find stuff that was mislabeled that had Marty in it. And And, you know, I'd find just treasure troves of stuff. It was remarkable.
Funny, the only thing I was looking for was outtakes. I thought there might be some of him. we could see that he wasn't perfect, just like a mistake here or there.
No, well, I show at the end when he started to slow down.
Yeah.
And by the way, I show him, you know, he says, I wasn't even watching to see who was made the tackle on that play or whatever he says. And I had to listen to 12 hours of three or four Jet football games just to find the one mistake to show that.
Wow. When people watch this on HBO on the 26th, what do you want them to remember about Marty Glickman when it's all said and done?
Well, to use a Yiddish word, he is the definition of the word mensch. You would see his picture next to that name in the dictionary, word in the dictionary. But really, it's that he just never gave up. He faced so many obstacles in his life, overcame them all, and overcame them with style, and his love of the purity of sport. And the, you know, the film has a story about, you know, this Japanese runner Suzuki who was killed in World War II, and Marty's empathy that they had for each other. And just, you know, with everything going on with sports today, half of the stuff you hear has nothing to do with what's happening on the field. Steroids, it's women, it's DUIs. Marty Glickman really believed, because sport for him saved his life. This was a Depression-era child, and sports really saved his life. And he wanted everyone who loved that to embrace it. He wanted to give it to them in his broadcast. He wanted to help the kids in New York City, the Police Athletic League, other announcers. He truly wanted to share, you know, the beauty of the purity of sport.
Is there a broadcaster in your mind that's closest to Marty Glickman as far as style and substance?
Well, originally Marv Albert. I mean, he created his own style, but he is the main protege of Marty Glickman without question. And I actually had an interview the other day, and someone said, "What person in another field would you compare to Marty Glickman?" And I had never been asked that question, and I thought about it, and I had a very unusual answer. And it would have been Marlon Brando in acting, because Marty revolutionized broadcasting, radio play-by-play, the way Brando revolutionized acting.
Well, James, I think people are in for a real treat when they check it out. I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing some insight with us.
Yes, if they can, they can follow me on Twitter, on Glickman the Film. My website's glickmanthefilm.com, and also on Facebook, Glickman the Film. And they'll find clips from the film.
Oh, great.
They'll find pictures of Marty, some stories. And it's, I highly recommend this, not just for the sports fan, because his story is one that I think everyone will enjoy.
Absolutely. James, thank you so much.
Tony, you were terrific. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure, that's James L. Freeman, the producer, director, writer, and narrator of Glickman, which is on HBO on Monday, August 26th. We'll take a break for the 2020 and be right back.